Me, I'm sorry. I was fully warned, but then missed the cue. But we're going to look at the way in which, as we talked about this morning in class, David is going through a period of his life during the Psalms where he is in isolation. We said he went through angry Psalms for probably about the last 14. But now he's in a place where, even though he is mentioning his adversaries, he has a lot of time to think on his alone time. Why? Because if you just look at the subject headings that you might have in your Bible, going forward to Psalm 63, let me slow down. Where I'm preaching, we usually take a psalm a day every week. And this week we are in a set of psalms that runs from Psalm 57 through Psalm 63. And one of the things I got a chance to see is just in the subject headings. I like that because that means I don't have to read the whole thing and try to figure it out. And so just in the subject headings, there's something to learn about where David is. Psalm 63, a psalm of David when he was in the wilderness of Judah. Skipping Psalm 62, our subject psalm. Move backwards, please, with me to Psalm 59. Psalm 59, to the choir master, according to Do Not Destroy, a miktam of David, when Saul sent men to watch his house in order to kill him. And then in Psalm 57, the first one that we would have in the sequence for this week, to the choir master according to Do Not Destroy, a miktam of David, when he fled from Saul in the cave. And so even though David had a home to be in during this time when he was fleeing, his home wasn't a safe place to be. So whether he was in the cave or the wilderness or trying to hide out at home, he was in isolation. Why? Because being seen or even having friends, it was dangerous for him. And so in that time of isolation, a lot of what David was able to do had to do with who David was before he went into the cave. Why? Because if you know his story, you know that he didn't spend very long alone in the cave before everybody who was dejected and destitute of spirit and seeming like they were feeling at least like they were on hard times started to come to David at the cave. And it wasn't because David did great things in the cave. It was because of the things that David did before he got to the cave. And so one of the things to understand about how to thrive in isolation is it starts before I'm lonely. When I'm in a time when I'm actually in a decent place, a lot of what happens in the cave or the timing of what happens for me in the cave has to do with who I've invested in or what I've invested in when I was doing well. It doesn't always have to be a bunch of people. You don't have to have an army to accumulate or assemble to you. Sometimes it's just one or two people that God sends to you. Why? Because your life's still in danger. Why? Because when he's in the house, he doesn't need a crowd at the house. His house is being watched so that people will kill him. And so all he needed at that stage, even though their relationship would change over time, was Michal, the wife that he got from Saul, the man who was trying to kill him. So sometimes it's just one person that God needs to send to you in a time when you're in isolation. But that has everything to do with who you were before. Why, David? Because you don't get the king's daughter if you weren't doing kingly things beforehand, right? And so who he was before he was on house arrest or locked out of his house because it wasn't safe to go, or who he was in the cave or who he was in the wilderness had everything to do with how he spent his time before he ended up there. And so like our brother asked, when we get to Sunday morning, we take the communion, it says, let a person examine themselves. A lot of that has to do with, am I forward thinking? However well or however poorly I'm doing right now, I have the hope of realizing that it wasn't all bad. I might not have done everything perfectly, but God willing, some of those seeds I've invested in kindness are waiting to come back to me in this moment in the cave or in isolation, right? And insofar as God has given me another day, the enemy may have me focused on all of the things that I have done wrong, but God willing, one of the reasons why some of these are described as David's prayers, as we talk about it in the terms of reframing the issue, it's a lawyer term. A lot of times when you go into a courtroom, if you're hearing a criminal case, you hear, on the evening of, or at the time of, and your job is to basically, if you're defending someone, you have to reframe the issue. Why? Because the people they're talking about weren't born on the evening of, more likely than not. They weren't born on the night of when the incident happened. And to understand more fully what is going on, if you're going to be worth your pay at all, you have to reframe the issue to help people understand. Not that I'm just trying to distract you into something else so you don't pay attention to what happened on the night of. But there are some important things that happened before the night of that you need to know. And if you are going to be able to survive or thrive in isolation, We talk about reframing the issue. Put the courtroom aside. You have to be able to reframe the issue beyond what the enemy would have you focus on. Otherwise, your time in the cave is quite possibly a win for him. Because as we talked about in class, it's easy for me to ruminate and marinate. It's like you marinate meat, grilling season, marinate it for good so it tastes good. If the enemy has us marinating on the wrong things, it's for bad. It's because he's cooking us in the doubts and the things that we've accumulated, right? Because David didn't have nothing but a bag of wins to focus on when he was in the cave. He had some losses too. I'm sure he didn't just start sinning with Bathsheba. There's some things he could have thought about. If I would have done this instead of that in Saul's service, maybe he wouldn't hate me. If I had done this instead of that in front of my family, maybe they'd be a better refuge at this time. Maybe if I, the maybes are endless. And so understand the way in which part of David's ability to potentially have the confidence that seems to surface over and over again in these Psalms is he is not necessarily, like we said, self-esteem, it's good, can fade. God esteem is better because God understands who I am as a person, but who I am as a person is still deeply flawed. But if I have confidence that the thing that God has planned for me is larger than the mistakes I might have made, then I don't have an enemy who has this easy time focusing me on the mistakes. One of the reasons why it's so important to understand David is after his time in the wilderness, you get to see more of his character. There are people who are trying to kill him. We said Saul's one of them, right? What was his response to Saul when Saul was basically delivered over to him in the cave at one point? Twice, David's men begging, let me get him, boss. No, it's for mercy. It was forgiveness. The man named Shimei, after all his battles with Saul were passed, and David was now, once again, because of his own doing, was being cast out of his kingdom, chased by his son Absalom. There's a man by Shimei that said, gave him a grievous curse. And the way the story plays out, it wasn't just words. It seems like it had some consequences, because the Bible says, a baseless curse or a curse that doesn't have a good foundation, it doesn't land, it doesn't alight. And so it makes it seem like there might have been something in David's life that made this curse stick to him. But early when he came back into his kingdom, Shimei came to him in humility and David forgave him. When once again, one of his men was eager to get vengeance on Shimei. And so part of David's ability to feel forgiven in the cave might have had something to do with the fact that when it was in his power to do harm to his enemies, he was forgiving. So I talk about it from time to time. It becomes easier. You heard me preach. I said this last week. So forgive me for this repetition. But it's one thing for me to try to feel forgiven. But it's another thing for it just to naturally flow. And I don't have to pretend like I'm forgiving myself when I've gotten into the habit of forgiving things that just my conscience actually says, if you've forgiven that, can you maybe cut yourself a break too? So the more I get in the habit of forgiving things that may be larger than what my conscience is convicting me of, I don't have to force it. I don't have to pretend. It just feels natural. Why? Because before I wanted to forgive me, I was forgiving others. Oh, and I may be a part of that too. It's not an inconsistency. It's just a natural habit that I'm trying to work myself into. And so in the cave, when David is trying to reframe the issue, I think it's a whole lot easier if he is a person who has already gotten the habit of forgiving others. So now it's easy for him to allow God to reframe the issue for him too. David, just give yourself a little bit of the mercy that you've given to other people. But as you continue on, verse 2. Actually, did I start reading 57? No, I didn't. I'm sorry. Let's start. Verse 1 of chapter 57. Be merciful to me, O God. Be merciful to me, for in you my soul takes refuge. In the shadow of your wings I will take refuge till the storms of destruction pass by. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. He will send from heaven and save me. He will put to shame him who tramples on me. God will send out his steadfast love and his faithfulness. That's the one from David in the cave. And two things that caught my attention is verse 2. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills my purpose for me. Oh, it's what we talked about in class, his purpose for me. Sometimes my strength comes from understanding my purpose. And I talked about that whole concept of steadfast love is going to come up over and over again in this psalm and in others. He waited for his steadfast love at the end of verse 3. God will send out his steadfast love and his faithfulness, depending upon what translation you have. In the ESV, it's the steadfast love. Verse 10 will be some of the, or similar, it'll be the same thing, actually. For your steadfast love is great to the heavens, your faithfulness to the clouds. One of the things that the steadfast love thing for me began to become real is when it came into the contact with that whole term purpose, what God's purpose was for me. And so I talked about the way in which no matter where I was, whether I was preaching on a street corner or in a pulpit from a big church, I was the same person, right? Because I no longer had this question, who am I, right? Got guidance counselors in school. They paid a lot of money to try to help you figure out, what do you want to do with your life, right? Carries over in college when people are trying to plan for you. What do you want to do the rest of your life? And about 5 years of me being out in the practice, it started to become clear to a lot of friends I keep in touch with, that wasn't, we talk, thank hands up to our friends and family who are still in the practice, but half my friends aren't anymore, and neither am I. Because those who have found stability in the practice are blessed insofar as they have found their purpose in the practice. But one of the things that was being left out of my guidance was the degree to which there might have been something else for me. And so for me, here's the thing. Was my time in the practice waste of time? No. Somebody asked me, what's your process? What do you do now that you're doing two things that are so different? I was like, it's the same thing. It's essentially the same thing. The things that God was helping me develop in the practice are essentially the same things I do now. I think our brothers and sisters in the practice know this thing called issue spotting. It's what they badger us about in preparation for the bar exam. Can you spot the issues? And if you can't spot enough issues, you don't pass that test, right? And so the difference between issue spotting in the practice and issue spotting in life is we are conditioned in the practice to spot issues that we can exploit for whoever the adversary might be on the other side. See, the reason why what I did then is so similar to what I do now is I had to learn how the degree to which I can issue spot is only the starting point. Because the question here for David is, now that I've spotted the issues, what can I actually do to help you out of this situation? See, ultimately, we make, a certain value, we contribute a certain amount of value when we can spot issues, but counseling is such a huge thing now because people are paying much money to have people help them go beyond spotting their issues, to help them understand, okay, thanks, bud, you've helped me figure out what's wrong. Can you help me understand how to potentially fix it? And that's what's going on in this time in the cave. And we're talking about what's my purpose. A lot of me fixing my problems has to do with whether or not I understand the purpose that God has given for me. And the problem is, if I have the wrong voices in my ear, I might stray however many years down a path and realize that was not for me. Understand it this way. We just had, in the danger of raising too much pop culture, Jada Pinkett Smith just wrote a book. She's selling it now. And her husband got in a lot of trouble because he got up on stage at a very important event and slapped another comedian, Will Smith. And so now what's going on is it seems that they're trying to do the standard damage control. See, but the part of that story that caught my attention was she used to do these things before they came into that very public shame called red table talks. And one of the families they counseled during those red table talks was a very famous Christian family. It was the Currys. And at that time, the Currys were married. And Jada Pinkett Smith is giving this Christian woman, Steph Curry's mom, advice about her marriage. And I can't say it's causal, but after they got that advice about what a marriage should look like, at a time where she's now on her book tour, is basically saying, I wasn't even living with Will then. Based upon, we'll say it may not be causal, but it's sequential. I'm counseled as a Christian by Jada Pinkett Smith. I'm married. Don't know she's not, or she is, but. Now I'm going to take that advice back into my marriage, and here we go, toward the path to where the Currys now. Exactly. And so one of the reasons why it's important to understand, everybody can spot, not everybody, it takes some training to be able to spot an issue. The talent comes in being able to point people in the right direction. And part of that comes in the candor to be able to say, I've got this issue too. It would have been a lot better if Jada Pinkett Smith would have been honest now, before she was trying to sell a book, to say, I'm doing this show, the Red Table Talks, giving people advice, even though I'm not living with my husband right now. That's a little bit easier to respect than pretending like you're giving people advice that's based upon facts, things that have worked out for you, only to move on and help this, like we said, Christian family. Eventually, and this is my, that's my paraphrase, potentially, eventually, split. And so the reason why I mention that is because as we continue reading verses 4, 5, and 6, when David's describing his adversary, it's important to understand how the adversary presents itself. My soul is in the midst of lions. I lie down amidst fiery beasts, the children of men whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. They set a net for my steps. My soul was bowed down. They dug a pit in my way, but they have fallen into it themselves. Understand, over and over, the tool is not going to be, like we say, the enemy does not present himself in the form of somebody in a red suit with pointy horns. Please back up with me to chapter 55 and verse 21. Really in verse 12. Verse 12. When David is talking about another type of enemy. For it is not an enemy who taunts me, then I could bear it. It is not an adversary who deals insolently with me, then I could hide from him. But it is you, a man, my equal, my companion, my familiar friend. Verse 21. His speech was smooth as butter, yet war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet they were drawn swords. That's a recurring theme. Why? Because if you go forward to the next chapter we'd have for this week, chapter 58, verse 3. The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray from birth, speaking lies. They have the venom like the venom of a serpent, like a deaf adder that stops its ears so that it cannot hear the voice of charmers. Turn with me, please, again, to verse 6 of chapter 59. Each evening they come back howling like dogs and prowling about the city. There they are, bellowing with their mouths, with swords on their lips. And then please turn forward with me again to Psalm 62, the psalm that was our subject text for this morning. How long will all of you attack a man to batter him like a leaning wall, a tottering fence? They only plan to thrust him down from his high position. They take pleasure in falsehood. They bless with their mouths, but inwardly they curse. So understand, that's a lot of negativity. But understand the way that the enemy is coming at David. It's not always coming at him as Saul's people waiting at his door. Sometimes it's coming at him in the form of counsel, blessing outwardly, but inwardly wishing that they would fail. Why? Because understand, I cannot, let's put the Smiths and the Currys aside for a minute. One of the struggles that I have is making sure that when I'm going through a dark time, that I'm not secretly wishing that others are failing too. And so when I'm in that position, before I can counsel anybody, I got to get myself to a position where I'm genuinely cheering for the people who I'm giving advice. And so that's what we're seeing here in Psalms. The enemy doesn't have one approach. Sometimes it's folks hunting him out at the door, at his own door, so he can't really go home. Sometimes it's folks chasing him into a place where he's isolated in the cave, so he feels like he's the only one. Sometimes it's him out in the wilderness, but sometimes it's just a friend. How do we know? Well, Ahithophel, his close counselor, when the troubles mounted again, once God had put his enemies to rest, but God, David had brought the trouble back on himself, he realized that his kingdom wasn't completely cleansed of the ill will against him. And so God was able to bring him a silver lining through that adversity by bringing him another set of adversities that showed him another set of realities, meaning that set of folks you can trust, David, it's a little bit narrow. And so even though I've got you out on the run again, what I'm doing is helping you see a clearer picture of who you truly can trust. And so when we're talking about that whole concept of thriving in isolation, we say David needs to be able to get beyond the hurt of the fact that some of his trials were brought on by stuff that he did. One of the things that he can take comfort in is when he says your steadfast love over and over and over again is even when God is punishing me, there is something else that he is still doing that he sees beyond the time that he has me in, just a wreck that I made, right? And so that's when we're talking about that concept of steadfast love. It goes beyond me understanding my purpose to understanding beyond my purpose long range, that God still has a healthy purpose for me even in this moment, no matter how much I might have brought it on myself. If my perspective is, okay, after I get out of this cave, who am I going to be? Back to chapter 57, please. Verse 7, my heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody. Awake, my glory. Awake, O harp and lyre. I will awake the dawn. I will give thanks to you, O Lord, among the peoples. I will sing praises to you amongst the nations. For your steadfast love is great to the heavens, your faithfulness to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. See, one of the reasons why it's so important to understand who is influencing us in our times of doubt is to understand, just in your own city, you got one of the best examples of why it's so important to be steadfast. A man by the name of Ronald Ory became very famous for helping the Rockets win two championships. Just to explain a little bit of basketball for you, there are glory positions like there are in life, and then they're the inglorious positions. And Robert Horry had a relatively inglorious position. He's what we call a corner guy. A corner guy is a person who just kind of stands in the corner and waits for a team to be exceptional. And when everybody collapses on the exceptional guy, he reminds you of why it's a basketball team and not just one guy. Robert Horry was called Big Shot Bob. Not because he was a big shot, because he hit big shots. Big Shot Bob won more championships than the Dream. But that's not a knock on the Dream. The Dream was great. If anybody knows, how many championships did Robert Ory win? NBA. Seven. Seven NBA championships. That's like as many as Michael Jordan, right? Or is it one more? There's one more than Michael Jordan, right? I'm going to name somebody else for you. Dennis Rodman. I know, interesting fella, but how many NBA championships did he win? Oh, no. Three's a good guess. Please check me on this, Beer Berean. I think Dennis Rodman won either five or six NBA championships, which is as many or more than LeBron James, who is in the conversation of being the greatest of all time. What was Dennis Rodman known for? Going to get everybody else's misses. He just rebounded and play defense. He might have scored 2 points a game. Nobody cared because he was not shaken by the need to be like Mike. Mike was calling Dennis in. Dennis, can you come help us? We don't need another Mike. We need a Dennis. And so part of that concept of being steadfast is making sure that when God is helping you understand what your purpose is, he's basically, I don't want to sound too casual, but he got you. He's got you in that. And the circumstances that David is going through are circumstances where no matter how much Saul may amass an army to catch him, as long as God has got David, Saul's not going to get him. And that's the difference between being in your purpose and being out of it. There was a cloud that separated the people of Israel from the army of Egypt. Who knows how close they were to one another? Egypt was not getting there because Israel was in God's purpose. And that's the value of understanding what your purpose is. No matter how close your adversary is, they're not getting there. As long as you are in your purpose. And that's the additional value of being within your purpose. Bob, you don't have to be like Akeem. Because after you win two championships with the Rockets, the Spurs are going to want you. And after you win a couple with the Spurs, then the storied franchise, the LA Lakers, they're all going to want you because you weren't trying to be like anybody else on the court other than Bob. Sometimes it's just great to be Bob or Dennis, right? It's the same thing. They're winning more championships than the greats because people see their value, even though not everybody saw it at the same time. I'll end up with this one. Since I'm in the Seattle area now, there's an ex-player's kid, Gary Payton, has a son, Gary Payton II. I didn't fact check him, so fact check me on this one too. That kid was almost out of the NBA all the way. He was working, I think, in their film department, because he thought he was after his last chance to make the NBA. Public record. His dad thinks he's pretty good, but he ain't me. And so Gary Payton is saying that. What do you think the other however many teams in the NBA are going to say, well, if his dad's saying that, then I don't know what happened. But what happened is, you have to understand that you're not always waiting for everyone to agree. That's our subject text. Please turn to chapter 62 with me. Chapter 62, verse 1. For God alone my soul awaits in silence. From him comes my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be greatly moved. He's going to say it again. Verse 5. For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence, for my hope is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be shaken. Young man who is very famous right now, relatively famous. He's Houston famous. Had a radio show here for a while. He told the story about how he had a whole bunch of doors closing his face and the disappointment that began to set in. But years before he began to start pitching his radio show, he did a comedy show where he felt like he bombed. But there was this one person in the audience who was laughing. And they were laughing, kind of. He was like, I was getting uncomfortable, I guess, about the way that they were laughing when nobody else was. So I just walked off and didn't think much of it. But eventually down the road, when he started getting all those doors closed in his face for his radio show, she had a radio show that was nationally syndicated, not just locally syndicated. And so even though he was pitching his shows to local stations, this person, the only person who he describes as laughing at his jokes in that audience, called him up when she needed a comedian for her radio show. And he went from being locally rejected to being nationally syndicated because he was comfortable enough to know that he didn't have to make everybody laugh. And so one of the things about isolation is it helps you understand you're not always playing to the entire crowd. That can actually cause you to twist your skills and the things that God has for you to do in a way that has you fit with that crowd. But that crowd might not be where you're really meant to fit. So I know this is sounding all inspirational and whatnot, but seriously, the reason why I say it is because it's where David is, in the cave, in the wilderness, or locked out of his house. Because beyond an individual, that young man, Gary Payton II, had only one team that was interested in him. One team that was interested in him. And it just happened to be the best team in this generation. Sorry. The Golden State Warriors. Okay, I'm sorry. They just won a few championships in the last few years. And so understand, beyond me telling you some pie in the sky, Jesus got you. No, he moves people into position where even though every other team in the NBA might overlook you, they're all losing this year. And Gary, we want you to play on the team that's about to win it all. But you don't know that when you just finally get your second chance after being overlooked by everybody else. So when David is in the cave, he has the benefit, one we don't have. I don't have any special anointing. Somebody coming to pour oil on my head, you're going to be the next king of, I might never be anything, right? But ultimately, these Psalms work on the principle of understanding what God has been willing to do for people like David. Not just saying, oh, I claim that promise, but maybe if I align my walk or my ways with people like David and the other people. He's not the only one that's mentioned in the Faith Hall of Fame. Go through Hebrews 11, right? Sometimes this book is just an encyclopedia of success and failure. It gives you an opportunity to see, okay, if God came through for these people in that way, maybe if I simply align my walk with the successes in this book who overcame the embarrassing moments in life, maybe my prayers will provoke him to come through for me too. So God willing, in your time of isolation, you realize that, and at some point, God's come through for other folks. And just like in the pandemic, those who were best positioned, it seemed like it was forever during the pandemic, wasn't it? Wasn't forever, was it? Opportunities came around again. Yeah. And so that was kind of like a global isolation. But we all go through periods of time where we just don't go through it at the same time, but we go through periods where we're isolated again. And the question is, how am I getting ready for that next opportunity that is coming by? I said it like this when I was on the mission field. Black Panther came out as a movie while I was on the mission field. And it was obviously a time where people were getting opportunities in Africa that they hadn't had before. But I got a chance to see how not everybody was prepped and ready for the next opportunity. And sure enough, people, oh, it's just a Hollywood movie. No, it's not just a Hollywood movie. A lot of business moved to Africa after that Hollywood movie. And the disappointing thing was, for those who believed it was just a movie, it was just a movie. But for those who saw the opportunity, they spent their time in isolation and shame getting ready. And now they're doing business. This is not a business lecture. But it's understanding David's opportunity was coming again. And what he did with it had everything to do with the way that he spent his moments in isolation. So God willing, as we sometimes say, God's best to you as you go forward in him, making the best of your moments in isolation.